Greetings, fellow investigators, and welcome back to our video podcast, Into the Darkness, where my friends and I play the Call of Cthulhu role-playing game. I'm your host, Tom Rayleigh. Stephen King, in his book Night Shift, says, "You want to remember that while you're judging the book is also judging you." Our campaign is Horror on the Orient Express, and this is episode 59. I'm your Game Master, and Jeff Wilkins will be giving the recap. The investigators are in Belgrade, Serbia. The players are ready. Let's begin our journey into the darkness. Jeff?
Thanks, Tom. Current date is February 9th, 1923. We're in the marketplace in the middle of Belgrade, having just recovered from an attempted robbery. We're sitting in a small shop having a rest and a cup of tea. We start talking about the simulacrum and the knife. Dr. Keith and Dr. Dawkins bring up a good discussion in that it's possible that the, quote, leader of the skinless cult may be one very old person who has been able to keep switching out body parts as he or she needs them. Frank's not entirely convinced as he's suspicious that it may be more of a possession or a corruption of one's mind when they learn about the secrets of the cult. It's pointed out that the knife has only recently been discovered after hundreds of years of being buried. So it doesn't seem likely that the power of the cult is derived from the knife itself. It's also pointed out that while in Milan, we ran into the replacement of body parts there as well. We just don't seem to have enough information yet about this cult. It's around mid-afternoon, so we decide to visit the local museum. We have a lead or a clue going back to the original telegram from Beddoes or Smythe, which gave us the name of Dr. Todorovic, who is the curator of the museum. He's busy when we visit, so we make an appointment to see him the next morning. The next morning arrives, we head first to meet the young man that Rupert hired to be our local guide or translator. I think his name is Peter. We head to the library, but with no clear leads, there's not much that we discover. There's a park nearby that catches our attention in regards to the Dreamlands. But before we go, there's a fortune teller right across the street. Frank and Dr. Dawkins are up for some entertainment, so we talk the group into going. We meet Madame Magdalena, the gypsy. She has a caged black chicken. She takes an egg from the chicken and performs some scrying. She tells us, among other things, that there are three ahead of us that will greet us, and that one man is as old as mankind and is very dangerous. Next, we visit the Calamegdan Forest and gardens, a park that might be an access point to the Dreamlands. We rest here briefly, and then we're off to our meeting with Dr. Todorovic at the museum. The meeting goes fairly well. We showed one of our pieces of the statue to Dr. Todorovic, and he's amazed. He's unable to determine what the material is. He then goes on to warn us that in order to transport any pieces of statue out of Belgrade, we would have to have the proper paperwork. This paperwork can be obtained at the Bureau of National Treasures. Dr. Todorovic has a source that he might be able to tell us more, but he's not willing to tell us until we have the proper paperwork. The next day, that will be February the 11th, we finally are able to track down the office of the Bureau of National Treasures, but when we see the young man sitting behind the desk, we take immediate notice of his face and that there are two different shades of skin color. We suspect he might be a member of the skinless cult. And that's where we ended.
Exactly. So you are literally standing in the office, standing in front of this young guy. And he looks up and he says, yes, may I help you?
We've come to apply for an export permit, please.
You want an export permit for what material?
Well, we're hoping sculpture, reliquary. Hmm. We are all academics. I'm a historian.
Can you show proof of your position?
Oh yes, yes, of course. And I'll show him my faculty identification card from Miskatonic University.
Okay. You know, we don't consider it a light thing to be. Are you going to be removing this from the country?
Briefly, we would be taking something probably to Constantinople to examine it, and then it would be returned here.
I see. Well, I need you to do a persuade roll to see if you can convince him.
Okey-dokey. Oh! Right, well, it's something 8. Just 48 out of 50, just.
He's like, well, let's see. I would like you to fill out this paperwork. You can sit right over there. And when you have done that, then I will look into processing. Please, you know, make sure you list what sort of material you're wanting to take out and where you're taking it and all the details, please. And how you're going to return it, obviously.
Yes, yes. Okay. Well, I shall sit down and do that. It'll be returned by secure parcel mail. Or on our return journey. I mean, I take it we're going to be coming back at some stage.
Hmm. So what are the other ones doing?
What
are the rest of you doing?
I'm keeping a lookout. Is there anybody else in the room or in the office?
No, his office is very small. It's literally the back room of the back room in the basement. There's no other room behind him. Just a few filing cabinets.
I know I'm taken up with filling in this form, but while I'm filling the form, am I sitting opposite the chap at the desk?
Yeah, you're facing him. There's a few other little chairs, yeah.
Could I make a spot hidden or something to see if I can ascertain whether it's just a birthmark or a scar or something?
Go ahead.
59. Nope. Nope, I failed that.
You can't tell.
How much is this permit going to cost?
The cost of the permit is only about £2. What, $2.50, $4, whatever.
Okay.
The equivalent would be. You other gentlemen, what's your business? Are you also applying?
Oh, we're with her, and I point to Dr. Keith.
I see.
As she said, we're all sort of a part of this academic group with Miskatonic University.
I'm not familiar with that. Where is Miskatonic University? What country?
It's in America, Arkham.
Oh, the United States.
Yes.
Are you? You're not taking this to the United States,
no.
Are you?
No. We're taking it to a facility in Constantinople where we can further study it with another team.
I see. He says, please proceed. And you see him sort of making some notes and stuff like that. And he's got some paperwork on his desk that he's going over. And he reaches for his phone. And it's not like this. I want to get a vintage phone. and he makes a phone call. Okay, it's like this. And you hear him, he's having kind of a quiet conversation. He says, yes, I think that we might have what you're looking for. It's possible. I don't know. All right, I'll try. And he hangs up the phone.
Is it possible for me to do a listen roll for a voice on the other side?
All you can hear is... Okay.
Charlie Brown.
And I heard you
No.
Don't hear that.
All right, well, Eldritch is paranoid as shit at this point. So,
he's speaking in English, or is he speaking, I guess, Serbian? Or
as soon as, we'll say that, like a lot of people, he started in Serbian, but then once Dr. Elizabeth began to speak, he started speaking English. Not great English, but passable.
What about in the film? Was he speaking Serbian then?
Yes.
All right.
What did he say in Serbian? I mean, would Eldritch be able to pick up on that?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Just yes and no's. No names or anything like that. He didn't
say anything else other than that. So it takes you about 10 minutes to fill out the paperwork.
Oh, what's my zip code?
It doesn't matter, Professor. Let's go.
Okay, all done.
All right. So he takes it and very carefully he reads through it himself. And he looks like he's getting ready to sign off on it. And then he wants to ask you a few more questions. And he says, so what is it exactly that you are collecting? What sort of material?
Well, what we're looking for is just a particular school of carvings and statuary from the Central Eastern and Middle Eastern region, which has been sort of an ancillary purpose to our trip. We're by no means suggesting that we will even find anything. Just that in order to liaise with local museums and our friend Dr. Todorovic, we would rather have the correct documentation before approaching anyone.
Oh, Dr. Todorovic of the university.
Yes.
We've already collected several pieces of painting, ceramic, marble, just relics in general, but we're trying to assess the region in Eastern Europe and even the Middle East, kind of with a fine-tooth comb.
My contention is that around the time of the Crusades, there was a very unique school of art at work, most of which was destroyed. But we have been able to find, I think, evidence of the a distinct school of art. But obviously, we'd like to present those to some relevant experts in Constantinople to have it assessed to see if my theory holds water. And then, of course, any relics we found here, along with the other relics we've borrowed on our travels, will be returned to their original countries.
It sounds very interesting. And you've traveled all the way from the United States, yes?
Yes, we have, yes.
That's quite a trip.
Well, we immediately began work in Rome and then pushed north into Germany. And from there, we've continued moving east. But as we've been picking pieces up left and right and sending them off to Constantinople, we've been wondering more and more about Dr. Keith's thesis, and that's where I come in. I'm her copywriter. I'm making the thesis while she goes and does all this.
Fascinating. All right. I think that we can have this approved. Let me go take it upstairs for a few moments. I'll be right back, and we should be finished with you right then. So he gets up from his desk and he takes your paperwork and he leaves the office. Same way you came in.
Is there another way out?
Nope.
There are no little rooms or anything in here.
Nope.
What about bookshelves? There are bookshelves?
Did I miss something?
No, not really. Okay. I said that he said that he needed to approve the documents, and he left and went upstairs. So you guys are alone in his office.
Well, I'm gonna.
And there's no other way out.
I'm just gonna tuck my hand into my coat pocket, in which is my little 2.2 short automatic, just in case. I mean, you know, I'm pretty sure that this is just a birthmark and he's a red herring, but in case he is one of them, I'd still quite like to be prepared, I think.
Well, there's one way for sure, and I'm going to tap Dr. Dawkins on the shoulder and say, why don't you keep watch? And I stand up, and I'm going to go right over to the desk, and I'm going to go around the desk.
Okay. All right, I'm keeping watch.
And with that, I'm going to kind of open the drawers softly and begin kind of just looking through. I'm not going to rifle through, but I'm just going to kind of look through the general content, see if I see anything interesting.
It's very likely that you will hear him coming a few seconds before he gets to the door anyway. The floors are marble. They click on his feet, you know, as he walks.
Okay.
You see a lot of different pieces of paper, a lot of file forms and blank forms and non-blank forms and things that have and files that have been filed, but nothing seems out of the ordinary for the Bureau for National Treasures.
If I run my hand along the bottom part of the desk, is there anything there?
Nothing.
All right, so I close the drawers and I look up at the group and I say I shrug and say there's nothing here.
All right, but we're currently on edge and we're alert. So
I'm gonna walk back around.
I'm actually also listening to see if there's multiple footsteps returning.
Okay.
Good idea.
About 7 or 8 minutes go by, and you can hear the clicking of his shoes coming back down. It sounds like only one pair. And he comes into the room, and he says, well then, he says, everything seems to be in order. And he signs the bottom of the document and dates it and takes out some little stamp, and he goes, you know, stamps it. And he says, here you go. Have a nice day.
You did the same.
Thank you very much. But sorry, but before I go, may I ask how long is this valid?
I'm sorry?
How long is this
valid? Is there an expiration date on the document?
Oh, I don't know. Indefinite.
Okay. Just check.
Right. And it limits you to certain things like statuary and not to exceed
£4 million.
All right. You get go ahead and do a psychology roll, somebody.
Not me.
I can. I have a 50 in it.
Yeah, go ahead.
I passed 35.
Okay. You get the impression that this is just a young guy. He's been given a post that's pretty much, you know, an unimportant. Obviously, he's in the basement, in the back room, and he does his job, but it's not
his dream job.
It's not anything that they consider incredibly important.
Right. Well, then, so I give a slight bow because I believe in Serbian customs, that's formal. Okay. And I say good day, and I guess I leave with the group.
All right.
Should I curtsy?
Well, probably.
I don't know. He's not like a king or anything.
He's just polite. There's a slight curtsy.
Should I all right. curtsy?
Oh, yes, Frank. Definitely.
Should do a full metonymia where you touch your forehead to the floor. And all right.
Yes. Jenny flagged before.
So, you leave. All right. Where would you like to go next? We determined it's about... it took you a big chunk of the day to find the Bureau. We'll say it's about 1:30 in the afternoon.
I am going to, as we go out, I'm going to actively be looking to see if we're being followed or if somebody is specifically looking out for us.
It doesn't seem so.
All right, but I'm going to stay alert on that.
Okay.
I thought for sure we'd have to bribe him. All these government red tapes, I thought for sure we'd get nailed with extra fees.
Oh, I don't know. I think it's a relatively civilized place, isn't it? Yugoslavia.
All right. So what would you guys like to do?
Sorry, what time did we agree it was?
About 1:30.
1:30. Well, I suppose we could head over and see Dr. Todorovic at the museum. Or at the very least, make an appointment to see him the following day.
Yeah, let's do that. Grab lunch. And if we can't get in to see him today, let's have a bit of a walk around the town. Just leave our wallets at home.
All right. So you're going to head over to the university or to lunch first?
Let's go to the university, set up an appointment. We'll see if we can get in to see him tonight.
Okay.
And if we can't, then we'll set up an appointment for the following day.
All right. You travel over to the museum and talk to one of the receptionists, I guess we should call them. And there's a bit of contact that goes back and forth between Todorovic and the receptionist. He would very much like to see you this evening, maybe around 4, if that's possible.
That is. Just in a few hours.
And he says, don't worry about if the museum is going to close or not. Just come in and tell them you have an appointment. So you have, it's now about 2:00, so you got a couple of hours.
Is there a restaurant across the street from this museum?
Yes.
I suggest that we have lunch there, preferably like a window seat facing towards the museum. That way we can keep an eye out on who goes in and out.
Okay. That's not a problem at all.
Keep a lookout for sinister fez-wearing types.
Yeah.
Go ahead and
they wear fezes.
Hmm? What's that?
So at least they wear fezes. They're not that discreet.
Right.
Well, except that there are a lot of people. The closer you get to Constantinople, the more fezes you're going to see.
Yeah.
Well, that sucks.
And you've already seen fezes around here, but they just look like people. So,
yeah, but if we see somebody that may look like they want to cause trouble, or a group of people look like they want to cause trouble, then we can head over there.
Well, so far, the cultists that you've encountered haven't been exactly subtle. So... Maybe it'll be fairly obvious when you see one.
Maybe.
All right. So you sit there across from the museum, and you see you know, people going in and out, and as the afternoon wears on, less and less people going in and out, more people coming out than going in. But you don't see what you'd call a shady or shifty character going in. Mostly families going to the museum, or couples, hand in hand. So we'll say it's about 3:45.
All right, we'll head over there.
Okay. All right, so you arrive back at the hotel, and the receptionist, you know, she's like, you know, do you know where he is? Do you know how to get there? His office?
Oh, yes.
Okay. So you head back to his office, and when you knock on the door, you know, he's like, please, come in. And he's got a desk over to the side. So he's sitting at his desk. He immediately stands up and comes over to greet you and shake your hand. And he, of course, greets Dr. Keith first. And he says, so did you get your permits and everything?
We did indeed.
Excellent. He says, please, you know, have a seat. So I was very intrigued by your piece. And I've thought about it a great deal. Such a piece would be rather outstanding. It would be unique. And I do have connections that would probably at least point you in the right direction if it's ever been found or seen in the area. So the town I'm going to send you is a very, very famous town in Serbia, thanks to the what's the name of the conflict? Thanks to the first Serbian uprising against the Ottomans about 120 years ago. The name of the town is Orašac.
How is that spelled, please?
Well, it's not like what you'd think. It's O-R-A-S-A-C. But it's pronounced Orašac, like S-H-A-C-H, Orašac.
Someone says, currently learning Portuguese. I'm not surprised by any pronunciations anymore.
So. And he says to you that his contact is an Orthodox priest named Vladim Filopovich. Father Vladim Filopovich. He's the local priest. He and Father Filopovich, I should be doing it. Back when we were at university, Father Filopovich and I were classmates, and we became good friends, and eventually he became an Orthodox priest, and he and his wife, he was a married man, they went to live in Orašac, and he is the priest for the people in Orašac. Now, it's out in the provinces. It's a bit of a journey, but he's not the actual source. He's my in-between man. I don't know who the actual source is, but he does. And from the quality and the unusual pieces that I've received through him, I think that if you contact him and his source, they should be able to determine exactly where you might find this piece.
Very good.
He's a very good man. They don't have a telephone. I've written out here a letter of introduction for you, which should facilitate anything. And with that, you should be able to stay a few days and find and contact your source, and that should help you a great deal to find this piece that you're looking for. I would be very, very interested if you kept me informed. I would like to know whatever you know about this piece. It's a fascinating piece. If you ever are able to find all of the pieces and we could reconstruct it, that would be a phenomenal. Could you imagine what that would look like in the center of a museum somewhere? Beautiful.
It really would be extraordinary, wouldn't it?
And especially if we could get some geologist or a mineralogist to explain to us what it's made out of, that would be amazing.
Judging from the conversations we've had with him, it's pretty safe to assume that he's not, what's the right word I'm looking for? He's not part of the society, right?
You mean the Arcane Society or the
Arcane? Like, maybe even not necessarily a member of the society, but like a trusted member from Smythe. Like, I know Smythe gave us his name as the contact, but it seems from talking to him that he doesn't have much of an idea of what's going on.
Well, he doesn't have any idea what you're talking about. I mean, of what's actually going on.
I think I remember him saying something about he knew that Smythe was into hunting ghosts and things that.
He knows what Smythe's speciality is. And he sort of mentions that, you know, they were friends. He knew him and considers, you know, highly recommend, but both of them would highly recommend each other. I don't know how you'd say that. They're mutual respected colleagues.
Colleagues, business partners, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Academic partners. Yeah.
I just wanted to make sure, because I thought I was picking up on that in the conversation, but I just wanted to make sure.
Right. You also realize that from past stuff that you've gone through, the journal about the blood red fez and so forth, that Professor Smythe has a lot of contacts in a lot of places all across Europe and the United States, and he's maintained those, you know, for decades. So you're not surprised that people all over the place know who Professor Smythe is. I don't know if I ever actually got down to explaining this, but Smythe is, I believe, that all of his degrees and his professorship are all in ancient languages. Greek, Latin, Serbian, Greek, Latin, Samaritan, he's an expert in all those things. So that's why he was so valuable to the Arcane Society. Plus his experience with debunking. All right.
Can I ask, too, I was trying to look this up on Wikipedia, and I'm not finding it an easy read. The Fez. I remember at one point you told us something about, like, the history of it. Of, like, it was a hat that was dipped in blood, and that's why. Did you tell us that, or did I read that?
No, it was something like that. That was their. It was like a warrior's hat.
So that's what. Do we know? Is there any sort of symbology? Why would people wear a fez? Is it just fashion?
Is it religious? At this point in time, it's fashion. It's all across Europe, especially in Britain. People love wearing fezes. It's just exotic. And actually, I think Mick pointed out that it's kind of like a smoking hat because it keeps the smoke out of your hair. And it's a fashion thing. It's just become really popular.
Okay. It's not religious at all or anything like that.
I don't think that it's religious at all. It's just kind of a fashion. Originally, it had a different meaning, but now it's just fashion.
Okay.
I think. I'm not sure. But I'm pretty sure that's the case in the 20s.
I think the fezes might have something to do with Turkish republicanism as well. I think they're a symbol of Turkish republicanism and the... what do you call it? The opposition to the Sultanate. Something to do with the Ataturk. Who isn't Ataturk yet? Because it's the 20s.
All right, so back to the game. I hope that answered some of your questions, Jeff.
Yeah, I basically just wanted to make sure it wasn't religious, that's all. Like, I kept thinking of, like, a Jewish...
A yarmulke? No, I don't think that it is.
Okay.
Or a turban or anything like that. All right. So, now where were we? You had finished with... unless you have something else for... Professor Todorovic.
You said it was a distance. How far are we talking?
It's probably about 50 miles south of here. I'm not sure. And he says to you, you'll have to check and see. This time of year, the roads are not always very reliable, but there should be, you're going out into the countryside. There are always trains, not quite as beautiful as the Orient Express, but they are utility trains that will take you out into the area and drop you off for far, far, far less money than what you are paying for the Orient Express. I'm assuming that you guys mentioned the Orient Express. Obviously, that's how you're traveling. Look at you. You're beautiful, happy, healthy, wealthy people. He says, yes, you'll probably have to... He says, I have no idea what trains you would take, but you can find that out. All right. Do you have any other questions? Would you like to kiss the statue of Venus before you leave?
Well, the way you were cleaning it up earlier, we wouldn't dare.
Good. See, you are a true conservator of the arts.
That was a test. You passed the test.
Oh, I'm glad.
Most people just want to go up and go like this.
Has it got a radio on it?
Yes. Her arms go up like this. I'm sorry. Horrible, horrible, horrible joke. All right, go ahead. What would you guys like to do now?
At the moment, I've got two things I'd quite like to do. One of them personal, and one which hopefully the group would agree on. The personal one, I would at some point like to see if I can find somewhere where I can buy myself a life preserver, you know, like a kosh or blackjack thing, which I think should be quite easy for me to find in 1923. Because I'm becoming very much aware that we are in danger. There are people pursuing us, and I would like the capacity to be able to defend myself quietly if I need to. We can't go around firing guns all over the place. And when it comes to hand-to-hand combat, I'm afraid I'm not very useful. So if I had something like that, it might even things up a little bit.
Okay. So you want a black check so you can clobber somebody with it?
Yes, if it comes down to it, yes.
Okay.
And the other thing I thought was, I wondered if perhaps we could visit one of the local libraries and see if we can get any background information about Oroshach.
Okay. There are two libraries. First of all, the blackjack I'll allow. I'll say that you can easily pick that up somewhere at the local blackjack shop.
Okay. Blackjacks are us.
There are two main libraries in Belgrade, the National Library of Serbia, and obviously the Belgrade University Library.
We were in one yesterday, right? 2 days ago.
I think you did go to the library, you just went straight to the museum, didn't you?
No, we stopped at the library, but we didn't really have much leads.
Okay, that would have been the National Library of Serbia.
Which one is nearest to the museum?
Probably the National Museum, the National Library. It's probably across the square. Actually, we've got a map, don't we? Probably on the map. Okay, National Library is...
I had another thought, too, before.
Yes, sir?
What if we hired Peter or someone that Peter might know to put a tail on the guy from the National, where we got the Bureau. The
Bureau of National Treasures. Bureau of
National Treasures. What if we start doing some following and spy work instead of us always being on the other end of it?
Well, problem is that we don't know if we could trust these kids. They could just take the money and never follow anyone.
Yeah.
Well, I agree, though.
Eldridge, do a psychology roll.
Let's do a psychology roll. Yeah. 43 out of 50. I'm good.
Everything so far with Peter seems like he's just an honest kid trying to make a buck, and he's a hard worker, and he seems upright and honest. He doesn't lie. That's the generalized statement, but.
Right.
Everybody will lie if they need to, but he doesn't come across as somebody who's dishonest or.
So, all right. I'll make that known. I'll say Peter may be a very swell kid, but we don't know the types that work with him. If Peter can vouch for maybe one of them, we could maybe use him.
Okay.
You know, maybe not pay him directly either. Maybe pay him after he tells us something that we need.
Right, almost set it up like Peter would be the middleman, and if Peter's friend takes off with the money, then Peter's the one who looks bad. And
yeah.
You know what I mean?
You just don't pay Peter. Huh. Right, so, yeah, no, I agree. I think that's a good idea.
Okay. I mean, it's a complete long shot, and I realize that, but I just feel like He was acting strange with that phone call, and if he was alerting someone to our being here, then maybe he has contacts that he's going to go to after he's done work.
Yes, that might be the case. It could also be the case that we're being too paranoid.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that we shouldn't be, but I think that, yeah, it is a possibility that every time we look around, we might see shadows where there are none. So you also got to be careful with that. You don't want to accuse this man who just might have a simple birthmark. You know,
I forgot I was going to try to shake his hand on the way out and see if his hand was squishy.
If his hand was squishy?
Didn't you say that like their faces kind of like would slush off a little bit? Or like if I shook his hand, would his skin kind of be like not...
No, that's not the cult of the skinless one. You're thinking of the cult of the Blumanji one.
Blumanji
one, yes. Do you have Blumanji? I think Blumanji might be an English thing.
I'm not sure I ever gave you any kind of clue like that, but not necessarily.
Well, remember we were watching the guy on the street, and you said that his face was kind of drooping.
Oh.
I took that to mean like the skinless ones, when they wear another person's skin, it's not 100% attached.
I'm not sure I remember exactly. I remember there was somebody that was wearing the woman's skin.
Oh yeah, that's what it was.
Maybe that didn't fit very well.
Yeah. Like it might have been hastily put on or something.
Right. I don't remember exactly. Anyways, that's not necessary. I'll just say, give that to you. It's not necessarily true of okay. Somebody who's doing this. They're not necessarily wearing somebody else's skin.
Okay.
You know. All right. So.
Um,
We can say that on your way to the library, you encounter Peter. Is there anything that he can do for you? He's kind of keeping an eye on where you guys are so that he can be of assistance if you need him. He may have been with you all day, but we'll just say.
Yeah, I'll just, so I'm going to set it up almost like it's a game with him. You know, tell him to here's a few dollars, tell him to find a friend of his. And
So you want us to keep an eye on this?
Just tell us where he goes. Person.
And you said he works at the National Bureau of Treasures. All right. You know, you tell him where it is, and obviously you tell him what the guy looks like.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And we'll say, like, report back at the end of the day kind of thing.
Okay. I'll report back to your hotel about, let's say, 8 o'clock.
Yeah, perfect.
Okay. All right. And you tell him, like, where your rooms are, so he can just come up and tell you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So that's set up.
Okay.
All right. And so now you're going to go to the library. Which one? The library. I'm sorry. You're going to go to the National Library.
Yes. Should we do that? Just go to the nearest one?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So what would you let you, what were you going to look up? You said Orishatch. Okay.
Orishatch. Yes.
Go ahead and do a library roll.
Oh.
49 out of 60. Okay. Apparently somebody's decided to cut down a tree or something because it sounds like a buzzsaw over here. Chainsaw. All right.
Well, let's hope it's not an inbred cannibal madman.
I'd see him coming. I got a big glass wall over here. So. Oh, yeah. All right. So you find out it takes you. You know, you work for a couple of hours, but you find out some interesting things about Orishatch. In 1801, a group of Janissaries, who called themselves the Dias, they killed the Ottoman vizier Hadzi Mustafa, a man sympathetic to his Serbian subjects, and formed a junta, to rule Serbia themselves. Under their harsh rule, taxes were increased, land seized, and forced labor introduced. Before long, Serb leaders called Nieces, began meeting to discuss revolt against the new regime. When the Dias discovered that this was going on, they captured and killed many of the Nieces. This brutal action on February 4th, 1804, fanned the embers of revolution. Both the Serb people and their leaders realized that they had nothing to lose. 10 days later, many Serbs gathered in the small village of Orishatch and decided to act. Karadorde Petrovic was elected leader of the uprising, which started immediately. That afternoon, a Turkish caravansary in Orishatch was burned. Its occupants fled or were killed. Similar actions were undertaken in the surrounding villages, and with growing success, spread further afield. On March 11th, 1804, rebels captured Rudnik, and then in quick succession, Vlejo, Pozrevac, and started a siege on Belgrade, which was to last for 2 years. Since its information, as well as maps and details of the local geography, are also available. That's what's also available to you. But you also find a couple of other interesting things. In pre-Roman times, the region was believed to be the center of a number of fertility cults. Some were clearly, at least in the minds of the archaeologists involved, associated with human sacrifice. Okay. There is also an account in the campaign archives of the Byzantine Emperor Nikephoros I, who was emperor from AD 802 until 811. And I'll show that to you.
During frontier expeditions, also an extract from the campaign archives?
Campaign archives.
An extract from the campaign archives of Nikephoros I, Emperor of Byzantium, 802 to 811 AD. During frontier expeditions to the region, the temple brothel to Sibyl in the forest of Mosia was found to harbor activity so abhorrent to the minds of Christian men that only its utter destruction by fire could be countenanced. The Drangaros recounted that some of his men, or the Drangaros, recounted that some of his men saw in the smoke of the temple the very spirit of the pagan goddess rise up as a titan, screaming with many voices, her hair waving as in a great storm. The weak-hearted grew afraid and ran, but in the morning, among the ashes of the ruin, nothing remained.
What would you like to do next?
That's a little worrying, because previously when we've encountered places with a history of cult activity, that seems to indicate that the cults are still there.
Maybe we should do some more research on the cults themselves so that we can be prepared.
Mm.
So. What do you want to research? Are you looking for more information on what they were talking about?
Sure. Yeah. Just the any reference to the cult in the region, fertility cult specifically.
Well, okay. Go ahead and do a spot hidden for me.
Okay. And I passed. I have a 65. I got a 53.
Okay. You find. You find a few references to the goddess Sibylle. And also some examples of possible human sacrifice in some of the more primitive peoples of the area. But you don't really find anything more informative than that. Nothing that really adds to it.
Are you familiar with that goddess, Fulgert?
I maybe. Can I do maybe an occult roll?
Sure. Go ahead.
And I pass 25.
All right. You've made me get out my iPad. let's see.
Is that a good thing?
Well, it's because I didn't anticipate that you were going to end research Sibylle, but it's probably a real thing, so.
How are you spelling it?
C-Y-B-E-L-E. The Magna Mater, yeah?
Oh, right. So she's the Great Mother, the Earth Goddess. Big archetype.
And I guess that it's actually pronounced Kibale. Was the ancient Phrygian mother of the gods, a primal nature goddess worshipped with orgiastic rites in the mountains of central and western Anatolia. The Greeks identified her with their own mother of the gods, the Titaness Rhea. So she's a fertility nature goddess.
I'm keeping my ears out for these. I want to put a name to this god or goddess that we're chasing down with this Guinness cult. Okay. So that's the first one I've heard. Are we in for a good time?
Wasn't she linked to castration?
Oh.
It's possible. Feel free to use your own iPads if you want to research her, because it's relative.
I think she was something to do with eunuchs and ritual castration.
All right, so you finished. You have something else at the library you want to try. No?
Can't think of anything.
All right, so what are you going to do next? It's probably in the evening. You probably want to figure out what you're going to need to do.
Yes, travel arrangements and so forth.
Do you have a time for the train? I mean, a schedule.
Let's see. Well, they don't just fall out of the air. You need to go somewhere and find out.
Would they have that information at the hotel?
Probably. Yeah, the concierge could definitely find out for you. All right, so we'll assume that you go back to your hotel.
Go back to the hotel and ask Monsieur Gustave.
He says that it takes him a few minutes to go over the stuff and make some phone calls and so forth. What you're going to need to do is indeed motor transportation is not possible at this time because of the. There's not even roads in some cases. Standard gauge tracks connect Belgrade with a town called Mladenovac. It's a very busy factory town. It's about 40 miles south. And then that'll take you it's hard to tell, 3 to 4 hours to get there. From there, you have to take a branch line to a rail siding within walking distance of Oroshach. It doesn't actually go into Oroshach. That'll take probably another hour and a half.
So we're looking at a 4 to 5 hour journey.
You're looking at a... possibly... Yeah, five and a half hour, maybe even 6 hour journey. Just these trains don't exactly move like high speed. And he explains to you, he realizes that, you know, your Orient Express people, and he explains that you're not going to find anything like that. There is only one class on this train. It's basically everybody. The provinces out there, they need to do their shopping in the city. So you're going to be encountering a lot of people who have gone back and forth to get supplies to take back home. It might be a little uncomfortable. It might be crowded, but you know, he can get you seats. He can get you seats tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock.
Okay.
And he explains where it leaves from and so forth.
And do they have a strong room at this hotel where we're staying at the moment?
At this one here? Yes, yeah. they have a vault. That's where you've been storing your stuff.
My suggestion would be that if we're going to approach this chap in Oroshach about finding part of the simulacrum, we sort of need to let him know what he's looking for. So should we take
a piece,
a part with us?
I did happen to think, I remember when we found the first piece, when we were trying to investigate it and see what it was and all that, I remember I took a bunch of pictures of it.
Ah.
I wonder if we could
ever have time. Oh, you've developed those pictures.
I'm just assuming because we spent
all this time.
Yes, you've had time to develop them.
Yeah.
I think at this point, Rupert, concerned for his mobility, points out that the coded message that we received did say that the further people got away from the parts of the simulacrum, the worse its effects would become.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So would it really be a good idea to leave the parts at the hotel, should they not accompany us on the trip? Otherwise, we run the risk of being debilitated.
It's a theory we should test, too. Yeah, I don't know what to do. I mean, we don't have any specifics on that. Is he talking hundreds of miles, or is he only talking like 2 miles?
Go ahead and do an idea roll. Since the two of you, since you guys were asking the question.
39 is almost
31. Which is a hot.
Okay. It seems it's hard to gauge, but it seems like a few weeks had gone by, and the distance would have been extreme because in all cases they had headed back to the United States. And that would have put them thousands of miles away. In this case, you're only going, you would, if you left them here, you would only be, you know, tens of miles away, and only for a short period.
I don't know. I'm hesitant to bring these all on a trip like this.
It would be difficult.
I will default. If you guys think it's important, then...
Not only would it be difficult, but it will definitely draw attention. I think we should bring at least one piece, though, as an example. Or if you want to just do the photographs, we can do that. And I would imagine these photographs are black and white, so it doesn't really convey the...
Yeah, that's true.
Gustav isn't over-listening what you're saying, but Gustav does sort of say to you that you're not going to have service like on the Orient Express. You need to keep a hold of your stuff at all times. And especially if you're going from one train to another train, you're not going to have porters moving your stuff around. You're going to need to keep your stuff in your hands, or you could lose it.
And we're talking like an overnight journey, right? At least.
Are there any hotels or inns in Arshat?
He says to you, probably not. You'll probably, if you're going there to see somebody in particular, you'll probably stay with them. This is a village.
In 2002, there were only 1,400 people in Warsaw.
Yes, there are only 800 there now.
Hmm. Well, it looks like we'll be roughing it then.
All right, well, we know what we're up against.
So what's your vote, Dr. Hogan? Bring one of the pieces or all of the pieces?
We could bring one. I would say one. One of the arm pieces, because that's the smallest.
That's the same one we showed to Dorich, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if Dorich was talking about it to him, he might have mentioned the arm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hmm. And so that doesn't betray the fact that we have others.
It won't show our complete hand as well. He may only know that we only have the one piece. Mm-hmm. If we bring another piece, then that's more information that we're giving out.
Yep.
I'm going to give you this as well. Communication between Belgrade and Orishach is nil unless you send a letter via the post, and that's not going to arrive anytime soon. It's literally out in the country, so.
No telegram service out there?
There's probably not electricity out there.
Okay. No electricity? We aren't going to rough it.
Oh, it's nothing that your ancestors didn't have to live with. Actually, considering the ages of you all, you've probably all had to live without electricity.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. I spent 5 years of my life in West Russia, Southwest Russia. So there's I imagine there's no electricity in Tsarist Southwest Russia on the Turkish border.
All right. So I think that you've stated what you're going to do. It's now the evening. You've eaten. What would you like to do before you go to bed, or if you want to do anything at all?
I think Kenobi Knight's in order.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, 8 o'clock comes. There's a knock at your door.
Peter?
It's Peter. And he says to you, he says, well, I did as you say. I'm not sure why you want this information, but the man you were talking about with the funny face, he left the offices. He went to, and he gives you an address, and he went inside. It seems like there was a woman there, and I didn't peek in the window, but I assume he just went home for the night.
Okay. I will thank him and pay the agreed upon fee.
Okay. Is there anything do you need my help tomorrow?
Do we? I say that into the room.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Are we going to need a translator?
I can translate that.
Okay.
I'll tell you what. I'll pull out a few British pounds as well, and I'll say, while we're away, keep an eye out on that gentleman. Also, I want you to, and I ask if he knows the professor, the doctor, at the museum.
Not particularly, he doesn't, but...
Does he know of him? Would he know... Would
only
he
because you tell him.
Oh, okay, he wouldn't recognize him if he saw him on the street.
Not naturally, no.
Okay, so then I'll just say, just keep an eye out on him, on the man that we had you follow today.
Okay, are you going somewhere?
Well, we'll be, traveling amongst the city. We're going to meet up with a few colleagues of ours.
Okay.
In town.
Yes. So
on business. So, but he says, while we're away doing that, you know,
keep an eye out. He says he will continue to watch the piebald man, and he will. He's not sure what you want him to do with watch Dr. Todorovich as well.
Yeah, just see if anybody is like following him.
Okay, well, I'll have to probably get another person to help.
Okay. And I'll give him.
Okay.
Like 5 or 10 pounds.
And he's like, "Ooh, this is all very mysterious, but as you wish." So, with that, he departs.
Yeah.
All right. Anything you want to?
That'll help us if you come back and he has some news for us.
Okay.
That should help us.
All right. So, anything more this evening before tomorrow?
Not for me. I'm going to go to bed.
All right. So
same here, I think.
Mm-hmm. All right. So you all go to bed. Eldridge, Mr. Troublemaker, are you going to do anything tonight?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I've got really nothing to say in this session. I know that usually I'm much more talkative. Actually, well, something that I want to bring up to the GM and I guess the other players is that slowly as more and more things happen, Eldridge is becoming more and more paranoid, and so he's not sleeping, and he's rarely eating.
Okay.
And so eventually I'll be more in-depth role-playing that, but he's looking sickly.
Okay. Now, you're also going into an area, now that you're going out of the provinces, your translation skills are going to be probably the most valuable thing.
Yes. Well, that's good. I'm glad that my translation, my Russian, will be of use.
Right. All right. So you guys sleep, no problems. No strange creatures coming through your windows. No bizarre dreams.
Sanity recovery?
Sure. Yeah. You do a sanity recovery.
Just 1 point, or should I roll?
Do a 1-4 roll. We can all do that.
2 points.
All in all, the last couple of days have been rather uneventful and pleasant. Good old investigation, not running for your life from pig-faced monsters or anything like that.
Turning to somewhat of normality.
All right. Next morning you get up, you make your way to the train station, and you aboard a rather small and jam-packed train. You get there, I would say, if you were talking about the number of people getting on this train, you're kind of there in the middle. So you sort of vie a little bit with people to try to get a seat. The seats aren't assigned. There are people in there with packages and all sorts of things like that. Everybody give me a luck roll.
Yep. Just.
Nope.
19.
So who failed? Just Eldridge?
That's me.
All right. So you all sort of scramble at one point, and you all get seats, and just as Eldridge steps forward, because he can see there's an empty seat up ahead, as he steps up there, there is a large black hen that is sitting on the seat.
A hen? Like a chicken hen?
A chicken is sitting on the seat. And as you step forward, it stares at you.
Is there a seat next to it?
No, there's a woman in that seat. In this car, there are no other seats except for that one.
Serbian in ethnicity and nationality?
Yeah.
All right.
Pretty much.
Okay, so in kind of broken Serbian, I say, is your chicken? Is your chicken?
And the woman looks at it and she's like, no.
What the fuck? Okay.
Does it have a ticket?
Yeah, does it have a ticket? Is it in the front? Is it in like the little pouch?
There's no ticket.
I look over to the next person, the person across the row, the aisle, and I point to them, and I point to the chicken. I say, is this your chicken?
No, no. Now, people are starting to become a bit amused watching you being flustered by this chicken.
Okay. So, here's what I'm going to do.
Is it the same chicken we saw at the fortune teller?
How do you tell the difference in chickens? Looks kind of like the same kind of a chicken.
They're all black chickens.
And with that, just about that moment, Eldridge, do a... the hell? I've lost my brains all of a sudden.
A sanity check, because why is there a chicken in my seat?
No, do a... crying out loud. My brain just went completely dead.
There's only so many things.
Poultry?
I want you to do a poultry check.
I have that. It's in my science.
Do a dexterity roll.
Science
dexterity,
brackets, poultry.
All right, 17. That is a extreme.
Okay. As you're standing there, all of a sudden the train goes and starts moving forward. And when it does, you stumble back a little, but you catch yourself. Okay. And so now you're standing there and the train is starting to move.
So what I'll do is I guess I'm going to just like take my right hand and just kind of like scoop the chicken.
Okay.
Half of the seat so I can sit down.
As soon as you move your hand towards that chicken, it pecks you and you jump back. Okay. Cause it startles you more than hurts you in any way. But when you do, there's a number of people around who are now laughing because it's funny.
Yeah. I mean, I'd be laughing too if I didn't just get pecked, but I also want to sit down.
There are other people in the train also having to stand up in the front and back behind you and so forth.
I'm a roughy American. I shouldn't need to stand, Sir Game Master. Especially when there's a chicken in a seat.
The chicken gives you the evil eye. He's like...
It's definitely the same chicken then.
So what I'm going to do... Let's see... Oh. You know what? We're gonna, the last 30 minutes of this is just going to be trying to coerce the chicken. I'm going to pull out some. I'm going to assume. What do I have in my inventory? I have some really stale bread from Milan.
Oh, we need a luck roll on seeing if you've got anything like that.
Oh, because I had some from the lunch we had there. It's just in my inventory. I haven't used it. All right, let's do a luck roll. I bet it's a pass with a 31. All right.
All right.
So I'm going to pull out the bread. This was probably very hard bread. I'm going to try and find the softest bits. And I'm going to kind of try and bribe the chicken with the bits of bread.
Well, any movement you make towards the chicken, it just like knocks the bread out of your hand with its bill. And
what kind of asshole bird is this? Like, what kind of sin? It's free food.
Come on, Eldridge. You can't let a chicken get the best of you. I say that loud enough for the whole train to hear.
Well, thank God they can't understand you.
Well, they're laughing.
I mean, I don't want to be a dick and, like, throw the bread at it. But I'm flustered, and I'm kind of a little angry. I'm tired, and,
this isn't like one of those religious things, like, where the chicken's holy, and they just let them wander around and have the seats.
He's actually the conductor.
99.9% of these people are Christians, so...
There's no
holy chickens.
there's no patron saint of poultry or anything like that.
No.
Probably is, I'm just saying. Yeah, maybe there is. You know. Maybe this is a cult that worships, you know, the great fried chicken.
You get the distinct impression it's more like you can hear some of them mumble to one another, and it's like I think what you hear sort of on somebody's breath in enough Russian that you can understand it is something along the lines of City Boy's Afraid of a Chicken.
Well, I don't want to be a dick to the chicken. The chicken's a passenger, apparently. I want to just knock someone out of a seat when they're sitting. All right, so... All right, fine, whatever. I grew up in New York. This is I'm rough and tumble. I'm gonna take the chicken in both of them. I'm gonna bypass the pecking. It probably hurts a lot, but I'm gonna take the chicken and I'm gonna just put it on the ground.
Do a luck roll.
Dice don't fail me now. 28. All right, we're good. Okay.
When you end up reaching for it swiftly, okay?
Okay.
And you can see that as you go for it, it tries to leap up in the air and spur you with its, or get you with its claws, but you manage to get a hold of it and wrestle it to the ground, and when you get it on the ground, it sort of disappears into the crowd. You see a few people going, as it goes, but it's out of the chair and you can sit down now.
That's what you get people for when you make fun of me.
And in general, the people are laughing.
That's what you get for laughing at me. All right, so I promptly sit down and, you know, and if the chicken is still around, I'll feed it. I've got the bread now. I'm not going to eat it. Where's the chicken now?
It's disappeared, so... It's gone farther down somewhere.
Well, at this point, I want to go follow the chicken and give the bread because I feel bad now. But
actually, that wouldn't be possible. There's too many people up ahead of you that block your way. This train is now crowded.
All right. Well, I break the bread up into four distinct pieces, and I say, if you find the chicken, give this to him because, you know, I feel kind of bad.
They're all just amused and whatever. People take
We spend 10 minutes on my character trying to get a chicken out of a passenger seat. All right.
That was quite amusing. And we're all chuckling too. And I pat you on the shoulder. I'm like, are you feeling any better now?
Well, I mean,
I have a grin on my face. You seemed a bit down.
I mean, I really don't know. I mean, I don't want to be insulting and say, like, they clearly don't know how to maintain their trains because there's just wandering chickens on the train. But at the same time, I'm like, there was a chicken on the train, and it's just like a wild chicken. Like, I don't know how to feel, really. I'm just like, I'm happy I have the seat.
Is this train, like, strictly a passenger's train, or does it also ship goods?
Well, you're not so sure about goods, but you think this is probably just strictly a passenger train and not a very big one. It's a commuter train and it's overpacked. The seats are all taken because you were there kind of in the middle, but shortly after that, more people got on and packed the aisles and So you're lucky to have gotten a seat at all.
I see.
You should remember that on the way back, because if you'd have arrived 15 minutes later, you would have been standing for 3 or 4 hours. Point of experience in my life, I went from Athens to Thessalonica, which is a 10-hour-long trip, on a train, standing the entire way, like this, with people all around me.
Oh, man. My worst nightmare.
It was bad. All right, so you arrive about 4 hours later in Mladenovac, and it seems to you like when they detrain, or when everybody gets off the train, it's freaking like everybody gets off the train at once. It's complete pandemonium. You find that if you set your bags down or any of your stuff, you just have to immediately snatch it up in your hands to keep it from getting jostled and kicked under a seat or something like that, as everybody just scrambles to get off the train. They don't wait for one another. They just go. When you're in Mladenovac, your other train is just like across the platform, and it takes you 10 minutes to get across the platform because there's so many people coming and going and carrying packages and boxes and groceries and all sorts of things. And you realize, too, that now this train that you're going to be getting on, the one that's going in the direction of Orishach, is even smaller and just as densely packed with people. No chicken this time. But this is only going to be about an hour and a half. And I will let you guys roll your luck roll again. But if you fail, you don't get a seat. You get to stand for an hour and a half.
Oh, goody.
42. 2 out of 57.
19 again. Sweet.
Now, did you all actually roll those rolls, or do you just want to sit down?
No, I rolled that. If I'd failed, I would have just started jabbing people with my umbrella until they gave me a seat.
actually, that's kind of... Let's just play this for the sake of for the sake of flavor, and that's that, Dr. Elizabeth, you don't get a seat. And as soon as the train starts, a young man who did get a seat immediately gets up and gives you his seat. Because you're a woman, and it would be extremely rude for him to sit while you're standing. So,
what a well-bred and personable young man.
Chivalry is not dead.
I shall thank him as best I can.
And he smiles.
In my tourist Serbian.
All right. You are told by the conductor that... Where is it? That you need to get off. You don't want to go to the end of the line. You want to get off at a small station called Copiare. And it sounded like really early Italian when I said it, but it's Kopljare. And from there you must hike to Orishach. It's about 3 miles. Welcome to Serbia. So, after about an hour and a half, the train's going to stop just for a couple of minutes in Koptijari. And getting off the train itself is difficult, tricky.
Is it possible for us to find a map somewhere in the area?
No.
Okay.
There's no maps of the area. You get off along with perhaps 2 dozen people also. You're getting off the train. What do? You don't actually know You're in the country. There's no streets. There's dirt roads.
Did they give us a sort of rough direction in which to go?
Well, I want you to ask, so... Who do you ask? Do you ask the conductor? Do you ask...
Well, I ask Eldridge to ask someone, because I don't speak that language. Eldridge? I say, Eldridge, old chap, would you mind asking someone where we're meant to be going?
Sure, and I'm going to... I suppose I'm going to approach a lady... And say, excuse me, ma'am, do you know exactly where we are going?
I don't know where you're going. Where are you going?
And I turn back to Keith and I say, she asks where we're going.
Well, we're going to Oroshach.
Oh, Oroshach. Oroshach. And she just sort of goes like this. And you can see she's pointing towards like a hill. And she goes, you know, like this. Now, you also notice that nobody else is going in that direction. People are going on other things across the tracks, going in that direction, in that direction. But nobody's actually going towards Oroshach. But she just, like that.
Is there a reason why the path is... No one is going that way.
They all have packages. They all have groceries. They all have things. They're probably just going in different directions. Nobody's going to Oroshach. They're going to other villages. This is, you've been told it's about 3 miles to Oroshach. So there's okay. other villages around here and there.
So 3 miles, that's what? An hour and a half? If we just keep walking briskly?
No. No. 3 miles? No. And people can run a mile in a minute.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can't walk a mile.
Roughly 15 minutes to walk a mile at a moderate pace.
Right. So maybe under an hour you could get there. And it's rather dense woods in all directions.
Stay to the path.
Okay. All right. So you begin walking, and it's actually a nice day. It's chilly. There's snow on the ground. There's denser snow where the trees are because it hasn't really gotten a lot of sunlight to melt it. But in general, it's kind of a nice winter's day. You're not really uncomfortable. It's not uncomfortably cold. Maybe it's around 25 degrees Fahrenheit, which, according to my thing, would be around 4 degrees Celsius. I'm sorry, minus 4 degrees Celsius. You reach the top of the hill, and you can see that it slopes down into a valley, and you can see that there is a village off in the distance, you know, about 2.5 miles further on. Now, there's not any activity on the little dirt path that you're basically following at the moment, but you can see as you are approaching Oroshach that it's not a quiet town. There's people doing stuff all over the place. There's 800 residents. There's maybe 100 houses that are obvious houses. But there's some very basic little shops, like a general store and a few things like that. There's no paved roads. There's no cars. There are horses and buggies. And it's literally like going back to the late 1800s, at least in your opinion. There's no street lights. It's a little country village at this point. So I'm going to assume that you are on the edge of the village about to enter it. Is there anything that you'd like to do or
I will look around. I mean, we haven't been followed.
No.
I'm actively looking for that. Okay.
No, most definitely you haven't been followed.
Can we see a church in the village?
Yes, there is. Basically, the center of the church is an Orthodox church, with the domes, and not incredibly fancy. Looks like it's probably made out of wood, but it has a beautiful little onion dome on the top of it.
Well, I'm assuming that's where we'll find Father Filipovich. Shall we head straight for the church?
You notice a few glances of people noticing that they're too busy to really do anything, but they look at you because you're obviously strangers. You're sure that everybody in this town knows everybody in this town.
Is there a chicken following us?
No. But you probably see chickens in people's yards.
Are they vicious chickens that'll take your seat?
Yes, rude chickens.
Those rude chickens.
As you enter the village, I mean, you see dogs barking. Children are playing in the streets. A lot of them suddenly stop and look at you, and you know.
I shall bid them a cheery zdravo.
Zdravo. So, okay, you're going to head towards the church. Jeff, what day of the week is it? Do we know?
It's Saturday or Sunday, right?
I've lost track, actually, of the days. This is what we shouldn't do.
Well, 2 days ago was Friday.
Hang on, is it the 12th or the 13th?
It is currently the 12th, which is
Sunday.
Monday. Oh, 1923, right?
Oh, yeah. Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Yes.
Monday.
Okay, so it's a Monday. So the church looks all closed up. It is approaching 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and you know, the sun's getting closer to the horizon. It's late afternoon. Would you like to do anything?
He's not expecting us, but we have a letter, right?
Correct. Yes.
I guess just go in, right? Or should we secure lodgings first?
Okay. Well, let's do it this way. You find yourselves at least kind of stumped as to what you need to do at this point. You're standing there in the town. You're obviously strangers. People have seen you. And after you've stood there for a few minutes, you suddenly notice a man. I'm going to say he's dressed rather well for country dressed. He's not in like a suit that you'd see in the city, but he's in a good country suit. He has a couple of people with him, a couple of other men, and they're walking towards you. They come up to you, and the one in the front, in the center, he's like, "Hello, strangers, so welcome to our town." Now, the only one who can understand him at this point is Eldritch, okay? Because he says, "Please, you are strangers. We do not get strangers here very often. What can I do for you? My name is Todor Nedic, and I am the mayor of the town," I think you would say.
I don't bow as heavily as I would for a religious figure, but I definitely bow. And I say, it is very humbling for the mayor of the town to approach five. There's five of us, because
right.
Five strangers, just five travelers.
He says, like I say, we don't get very many people here. We are a very small town, but you've probably come here because you have heard of the illustrious history of Orošec and the part that we played in the First Serbian War against the Ottomans, yes?
Yes, this is actually correct.
Well, welcome to our town. It is cold out here and it is getting dark. Please come with us to the town hall. Have you eaten? You have traveled, what, from the train station?
Yes, we've traveled from Belgrade.
My goodness, that is many hours of travel. Please come. We must give you food. We must give you something to drink. And surely you aren't going to continue. We will make sure we find some place for you to live, for you to stay, to rest.
Well, I'm not going to commit that hard. Your food may be good, but... I say thank you very much.
Have you come here to visit someone? Do you need us to contact someone for you?
No, we're simply here to do a study. We're you see, we're with a university, and I point to Dr. Keith. I say and I point to Dr. Dawkins. She and he are leading this team. We're looking into the history of Orošec.
Oh, that is very interesting. Please come then with us. And he takes you basically to what would be like a little town meeting hall.
Off to
the side. Imagine that the village is a circle with a church in the middle, and off to the side there's this little place where they have town meetings. And people now are becoming, their work day is over. It's the sun's gone down. They're curious. They want to see the strangers. So they come. They basically take you in. It's nice and warm inside. There's a fire going. They feed you. Rather sumptuously. In fact, they overstuff you. They're fattening you up for the slaughter. No, they're not. They're very hospitable. They're very hospitality is everything. So they make sure you have plenty of food. And every time you eat something off your plate, they put some more food on your plate. So you have come here, but you. You're just here to study. How long will you be staying in our town?
We will be staying here for as long as necessary. And I turn to Keith. And I say, they're wondering how long we're going to stay here. Kind of think of how long we're going to stay here. And I turn back and I say, of course, we'll compensate you for any lodging or food that you provide. We don't want to be a burden.
No. It's our pleasure. It is our great pleasure to have such guests who have come from so far away.
I then say, it is in our custom, in my culture's custom, that 5 days is the longest a guest can stay without doing something for the host.
Oh, you'll be staying longer than 5 days. Well, that's different.
We don't really know.
He's like, well, we will make accommodations. Let me see what I can do to find you a place to stay, and it will be about please enjoy the food, please enjoy the beer, the food, the drinks. And I will be back shortly with the information for you. So
yes,
there
everybody is smiling. Everybody is you know, you get a lot of people who come up to fill your tea, to fill your to fill your food with big smiles on their faces, and they're very pleased, it would seem.
Okay.
What do you want to do next?
No idea what we want to do next. I looked at the group and I say, what should we do? What should we tell them? How much do we want to tell them?
You guys are all muted. Oh.
I don't think we should tell them much.
What should we tell them? I've told them that we're just here studying the history, and that Dr. Keith and Dr. Dawkins are kind of the leads, and I'm just a translator, essentially.
I think we should be quite cagey until until we've discussed the matter with Father Filipovich. The last thing we want to do is to approach him about this and find that we've told them something that we shouldn't do, and blown his little operation. I'm sure they don't know that he's dealing in these artifacts.
We could just simply tell them that we're doing a comparative history of both Christianity and Islam during, I'd say, the, you know, era of the Crusades. And so we've been traveling around Europe, you know, just getting some information. We'll do something like that.
Other than that?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you said, Thomas.
Oh, I said we can tell them that. I think that's not a bad idea at all.
Okay. About that time, now there's other people. There's a few people in here. Most of them have gotten a look at you. They've left. Some stayed. Some are still, like, serving you food. And a few people ask you questions. You know, a young woman, she smiles at you a few times, Eldritch, and, you know, they want to know where you came from, and my goodness, they're asking you a lot of the same questions.
And I, given the general breakdown, where researchers from Arkham University, Dr. Keith and Dr. Dawkins are leading an expedition to discover a comparative history between Christianity and Islam in Eastern Europe. We're possibly looking for relics, but right now we're just focusing on the history. I'm a translator. Mr. Coates is a photographer. We've traveled a long way. We started in Italy, and we kind of worked our way up. The same generic lie I told at the Bureau.
Okay. So after you've chatted with these people for about 20 minutes and you've eaten till you're stuffed, you notice Todor Nedic, the mayor, he comes in, and he is accompanied by a man dressed all in black with a hat on his head that's very much like a fez, but it's black. And there is a little cross, a little red cross in the forehead of this hat. He has a big beard, big mustache. And you can see that he has long hair, very much like Jeff. And he's also wearing a chain with a gold cross. So you're pretty sure that's the priest. Well, Eldridge, you would know. You're Russian. He looks like a Russian Orthodox priest.
All right. So as soon as he enters, I'm not particularly Russian Orthodox. I was raised that way, but so I know. Yeah. So I full on. I'm on the ground.
Okay. And
I wave down to the group, like, get the fuck on the ground. Do this. Do what I do.
Well, as they approach this priest, he's like, oh, no, please. Todor Nedic.
And I slightly just, like, tilt my head up. because I'm waiting for the tap.
Todor Nedek is like, this is Father Vladim. Please, we have, we are not able to accommodate you all together. We have decided that two of you can sleep at Father Vladim's house, and three of you can sleep at my house. I have a large family. I have plenty of room in my house to accommodate three of you.
I relay this to the group, and I say, where do we want to bunk?
Somebody should stay with Dr. Keith. One of us gentlemen should. It's up to you.
Probably Rupert makes sense.
Well, I wouldn't normally suggest, but consider that Eldridge is the only one who speaks the language.
Yeah.
Now, the priest does know a little English. I mean, passable English.
Okay. So I look to the group and I say, I look back from the group and I say to the priest and the other man, whose name I can't pronounce, so I'm just going to call him the other man until I can get his pronunciation down. I say...
It's Theodore, but it's Todor. That's how it's pronounced.
Todor. I can't pronounce that name. Todor, I say, we're concerned about our lead, Dr. Keith. We would prefer if one of us slept with her, then the other two could bunk separately. Is this possible?
I'm not sure what you mean. You mean there's room for two people at the priest's house and three people at
Mayor's. Yes. I forget that there's five of us and that there's right. It's not four. There's five. All right, so I say that's perfect accommodations. We'll have Dr. Key sleep with two men in the priest's house, and then the other two will just bunk at the other house.
Okay. Two at the priest's house, three at the mayor's house. The mayor doesn't speak any English. The priest?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So who's going to be at the priest's house? Two people?
Yes.
Who?
At the priest's house. Me?
Yeah, it seems like, well... Eldridge and I'll go along.
Okay.
All right.
The priest kind of speaks English, so maybe it should be.
Actually,
no, Eldridge should go to the mayor's house because the mayor doesn't speak English.
Right, that's what I was thinking.
All right, so I can go over to the mayor's house, speak English for the
group. Why don't you, Dr. Keith, and Rupert go to the mayor's house?
Okay. Sounds good.
Is that
sure. Yes,
okay, so who's going? I'm sorry. I've been trying to write this down, but it keeps.
Whoever's down. Going to the priest's house should take the limb with them.
Okay. Who's going to the priest's house?
The English speaking priest. Dawkins and Frank.
Dawkins and Frank. And Elizabeth, Rupert, and Eldridge. Go to the mayor's house. All right. I'm just going to give you a little bit of information, and then we'll call it quits. Dr. Dawkins and Frank, you go with the priest to his house. It's not a particularly large house. It's a frugal house. You meet his wife, Anna. She seems like a very lovely woman, and they're both very hospitable. They put you in a room. It's fairly comfortable for country, you know. The rest of you end up at Mayor Todor Nedek's house, and It's a big house. It's a much, much bigger house. And as you enter, there are children, there are other people there, and with Eldridge's help, Mayor Nedek says, please let me introduce you to my family. He says, this is my wife, Ilya. This is my father, Stefan. This is my mother, Theodosia. This is my wife's father, Radoslav. This is my wife's mother, Dushana. This is my first son, Simo. This is his wife, Draga. This is Radmilo, my second son. This is his wife, Ivanka. And these are all of my grandchildren, Daria, Angia, Miroslav, Zelenko, Mira, Nikika, and Spiridon. And with that, there's a lot of rearranging of who's going to sleep in whose bedroom and everything, and ultimately you guys are put together. So that's where we'll end it.
Well done.
I have it all written on in big, gigantic letters.
I started to type it out. I'm like, oh, this is important. I better write these down. Nope.
So that's a lot of people in that house. All right, so our players included Thomas McKeon, Mick Swan, Simon Ward, Jeff Wilkins, and Wayne Worthy, with myself as the Keeper of the Secrets. We're currently producing 4 shows a week with music and sound effects added in post-production in order to create a richer listener experience. We provide audio-only versions of our shows free for you to download from Podbean or iTunes. Patrons of our show can now enjoy recordings of our pre- and post-game conversations. Some of the funniest and most entertaining stuff occurs during this time. If you'd like to become a patron, visit our Patreon account. Just $1 or $2 a month will help us a lot. Like, share, and subscribe to our channel for updates on our latest shows, and leave us some comments. We love hearing from you. This is Tom Rayleigh, together with all the members of our gaming group, inviting you to journey with us once again into the darkness for another adventure into the universe of H.P. Lovecraft and the Call of Cthulhu role-playing game. Till next time, good luck and good gaming.